Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. A divided Supreme Court ruled that the Trump administration's decision to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census violates federal law. We've been doing a few shows about this. The Commerce Department says the questionnaires are being printed as we speak without the question, but the Trump administration is determined to add it, possibly by executive order. Why is that? Independent journalist David Daley says Republicans are fighting to add the question to maintain conservative power in a changing nation. In fact, last week, when Trump was asked why the question was needed, he said, quote, "You need it for many reasons. Number one, you need it for Congress, for districting." End quote. Well, joining us to talk about the census and then later about gerrymandering is David Daley, an independent journalist and author of Rat Effed, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count. He's also author of the forthcoming book Unrigged, How Americans Fought Back. Hi, David. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rose.
Well, I just want to give out the phone number for people who'd like to weigh in on this. First, we're going to talk about the census, and then we'll talk about gerrymandering. What are your thoughts about how the census and the question has been covered in the media? What do you think about Donald Trump coming out 11 days after the Supreme Court said the question violates federal rule? And he says that he's going to do possibly with an executive order to add it back, even though they're being printed. So if you have any questions about the census right now, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. So, David, let's just kind of go over a timeline here. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross formally added the citizenship question last year. And at that time, he said it was needed to assist the DOJ with enforcement of the Voting Rights Act. Can you remind us what exactly happened when he made that decision?
Well, there were a number of lawsuits at the time that were filed by groups like the ACLU and others on several different grounds in several different federal courts around the country. And essentially what those cases were arguing was that justification by the Commerce Department was essentially pretext. It was not the actual reason that the administration was not especially interested in collecting this information for better enforcement of the Voting Rights Act, but in fact they had a different plan for it. The deliberate undercounting of Latinos and other minorities around the country, and then the ensuing shift in resources and political power that comes from the U.S. Census.
All right, so remind us, what did the Supreme Court rule 11 days ago? What was the overall decision?
It was an extremely complicated decision with a lot of justices writing a lot of different things. But essentially in a 5-4 decision, the Chief Justice and the four liberals ruled that they did not buy the argument that the administration was selling. They said, you're coming in here saying that this is about the Voting Rights Act, but there's plenty of evidence that if enforcement of the Voting Rights Act is what you're interested in, there are other ways to go about it that don't involve a citizenship question, that you probably already have that information available to you. And also that you're essentially violating the Administrative Procedures Act, which requires these agencies that when they make a decision, they have to be forthright about about how they got there, about how they determined to make that choice, to talk about their decision-making process essentially openly and honestly. And what Roberts writes is that the evidence trail shows that the explanation was contrived. It was arbitrary, and it's incongruent with the actual evidence. And now Roberts cracks the door open, and he says, listen, if you can come up with an explanation that is not contrived, that's not arbitrary, I'm open to hearing it. But this explanation isn't it.
Well, I thought this language was really interesting. So they ruled that the administration's, quote, explanation for agency action was incongruent with what the record reveals about the agency's priorities and decision-making process. What did they mean when they referred to what the record reveals?
That's a really interesting question, because in the middle of all of this, what happens is a Republican redistricting mastermind's hard drive gets cracked open, essentially, and we suddenly begin to get thousands of pages of documents from the late Thomas Hoffler. And what all of these documents show is that the Republicans were thinking as far back as 2015 about how they could use a citizenship question on the census in order to gain political power in the redistricting that will follow the census in state legislatures. So essentially, they wanted to collect citizenship information so that they could then redraw state legislative districts in 2021, not based on total population as is the current norm now, but based on citizen voting age population. And the Hoffler documents make it very clear that Republicans studied this carefully, understood that this would cause political power to flow toward white communities and away from Latino communities, and that there was plenty of information from Hoffler's memos that flowed directly to the Census Bureau and to the Justice Department. And in many cases, Hoffler's wording is just cut and paste into the actual documents that the Department of Justice uses to request that the Census Bureau go ahead and add this question. So it was clear that the Republicans were up to something here that they weren't quite admitting.
We had you on the show a couple of weeks ago to talk about Thomas Hoffler. Fresh Air also discussed these issues today with Ari Berman. And in your Guardian piece, you report that Thomas Hoffler specialized in redistricting, and he was a mastermind at gerrymandering. He died in August 2018. As you said, his daughter, his estranged daughter, turned several thumb drives filled with her father's work over to Common Cause. I've been wanting to ask you, David, I've read on social media that his daughter actually read your book, Rat Effed. Is that true? Do you know?
I believe she has read the book. I know that certainly what she... the actual line goes more like this. She was unaware that her father had died because that they were estranged. And she ran a Google search on him, kind of having a feeling that he was ill and, you know, knowing what that Google search might turn up. And indeed, it did. She did find his obituary, but she also found an interview that I gave to a North Carolina newspaper, which is where he had lived for the last few years of his life, and he was deeply involved in the redistricting cases there in North Carolina, so it was of special interest there. And I talked to the North Carolina paper about Hoffler's life and legacy, and suggested that the only way we would really know, an awful lot of questions would be if Hoffler had left documents behind on his own hard drives. And, you know, turns out that she actually, you know, sees this interview and goes to the house to collect old family photos, the way I understand the story. And on these thumb drives are, you know, tens of thousands of documents involving redistricting and the census. She turns those files over to Common Cause, and they become, you know, crucial as far as, you know, knocking this question off the census so far.
In the memo, in a 2015 memo, Hoffler concluded that the switch would be advantageous to Republicans and non-Hispanic whites because it would dilute the votes of Texas's growing Latino population. And you write in The Guardian that Democrats captured 12 seats in Texas's lower chamber, propelled by long simmering demographic changes that have made the state less white, rural, and conservative. The Republican Party's enormous majority has crumbled. A 101-49 advantage in 2011 has been sliced to a narrow 83-67, and that slight edge could easily evaporate by the mid-2020s. And a number of activists in Texas say that they feel in the coming years, if enough people voted, Texas could turn blue. So how would this citizenship question change that?
This citizenship question could essentially roll back two decades of demographic change in states like Texas and Arizona. If you are, and the numbers as you've read off are exactly right. I mean, you know, 2011, you've got 101 Democrats in the House in Texas, and now that number is down to just 83. So these changes are beginning to come. And what Hoffler and the Republicans want to do, and Hoffler does a study of this, and he says, if you can district, not based on total population, but using citizen voting age population, what you then do is you eliminate everybody under the age of 18, you eliminate every non-citizen, you eliminate anybody, you know, on a visa or a green card, and you're just drawing districts of citizens over the age of 18. And he suspects, and his research concludes, that this would, as you say, make these states whiter and less Latino, because you would essentially be drawing larger districts in cities where there are more people, so you would be diluting all of those votes. You could hold back all of that change by essentially packing districts with more Latino voters, making all of the surrounding districts whiter, older, more conservative, more likely to vote Republican. It's a dastardly but, you know, very, very effective way of holding on to political power in a changing nation, of trying to manipulate maps instead of actually talking to minority voters and trying to persuade them onto your side.
As you report in The Guardian, Hoffler has been working on this plan for decades. In the early 90s, you report that he provided black Democrats in the South with the information and the computers they needed to draw majority-minority seats that expanded African-American representation, but also bleached surrounding districts to be whiter, more rural, and more Republican. And as a result, in 1994, the strategy that Republicans allowed this strategy allowed Republicans to break the Democrats' four-decade hammerlock on the House. So he actually also worked with black Democrats in the South?
Hoff was a fascinating guy, and he's been working on these issues for decades. Wow. Wherever you find Republicans in the shadows working to manipulate district lines over the last four decades, you can pretty much count on the fact that Thomas Hoffler is in the corner guiding them. Hoffler understands before almost anyone else in the country, you know, as a young political scientist in California back in the 1970s, he understands what computer power and new technology is going to mean for a political mapping. And certainly in the 1980s, what happens is that the Voting Rights Act is reauthorized by the Reagan administration, and one of the things that it makes clear is that wherever you are able to draw a seat that could elect a minority candidate, states were encouraged to do so. And Hoffler understood how that could also help Republicans, because if you were able to draw districts that packed as many of the black or other minority voters into as few seats as possible, you could take all the other seats for your own side. This is called the Unholy Alliance. and Hoffler, along with Lee Atwater, Republican attorneys like Ben Ginsburg, they invest in a plan to buy mapping software and computers, and they work with civil rights groups in the South, and they help them draw these minority seats. And what you see in the South, in states like North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, is that maps passed in the 1990s with a coalition of Republicans and Black Democrats, and that you see a dramatic rise in the number of Black Democrats in Congress, but you also see this sharp increase in Republicans across the South. And this is one of the keys to Republicans flipping the entire South from kind of older, more conservative white Democrats to white Republicans with a smattering of Black Democrats.
Today we're speaking with independent journalist David Daley, author of Rat F'd, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count, and he's author of the forthcoming book Unrigged, How Americans Fought Back. We're talking right now about the census and Donald Trump's plan to, he wants to add a citizenship question, even though the Supreme Court ruled that the question violates federal law. And then later in the show, we'll talk about how people are fighting partisan gerrymandering. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's go to David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Rose. Hey, before I get started, just a little engineering thing. The volume on your... I was listening to you on the speakerphone, and it is a whisper. So if there's a way you can turn up the volume on that, that sure helped people out. There were two things I was going to raise with the census. If I remember right, with the savings and loans crooks of 30 years ago, they were using census data to target neighborhoods to loot. So they were using, and it wasn't just census data. I think they used savings and loans, FSLIC data. They were using all sorts of governmental data to loot the nation. And so I'm wondering if your guest is familiar with that and whether Wilbur Ross, who's called the king of bankruptcies, is involved in setting up America again. The other thing is,
you know, David, since you have another question, let's take that one, and then you can stay on the line, and we'll take your second one. David, do you know about that, the savings and loan crisis and how the census data was used?
No, you know, I don't offhand. I mean, certainly there is so much information in the census, and it's been extraordinarily useful, especially as far as drawing district lines go. But, I mean, all of that information, you know, certainly could be used by banks as far as redlining, and trying to keep minorities out of certain neighborhoods. Census data can be used for a lot of nefarious purposes if folks are so inclined.
It's supposed to be private, though, right?
No, I mean, all of the census data is very public.
But it's not. I mean, it's not like my information is not private.
Well, your information is private, but the census is so specific. I mean, all of this information, and this is what is so powerful about today's computers, and it's what makes these rounds of redistricting beginning in 2011 so much different from any that came before it, is that the data is so precise. In a census block, the most detailed granular level that the census information can be broken down into is really just the size of a neighborhood block. So if you have that kind of precise demographic data about a census block, and you know how many people live there, and then you are able to sort of cross-tab that against voting records or any of the private data sets that are available, consumer preferences, social media, magazines, subscriptions, any of those things, you can draw really effective lines and just get such a precise sense, a block by block, of who lives there, how they vote, what they buy, what color they are, and you can use that for, you know, good or for evil, certainly.
Well, and we should say, though, because, you know, I try very hard to keep my information private, and the census is so important because it determines how, you know, building new roads and schools, healthcare facilities, senior centers, childcare. I mean, it's very important for people to fill out their forms. Now, I understand in this time that we're living in with hacks and just how easy it is for people to get private information, I understand why people wouldn't want to provide a lot of this personal information. But it is very important because it really does affect your community.
Oh, it's crucial. I mean, everything from the drawing of political districts and the number of congressional seats your state has, therefore the number of electoral college votes your state has, all the way down to, you know, federal formulas for disbursing hundreds of millions of dollars in government aid. An accurate count is absolutely crucial to a fair and functioning democracy.
David, did you have another question?
Well, yeah, and this is a little more on the engineering angle of it. If you think about the census in terms of freshwater needs or sewage needs for a county, and if the number is intentionally skewed, then that data is not prepared right. So, for example, if, you know, 10,000 people in a zip code are in existence, but they're not acknowledged, then that means that the sewage needs for the county are going to be actually 10,000 people higher per day. And if the county can't plan for that, then it goes into cost overruns. So if you take companies, you know, Halliburton or some horrible, you know, a company that's just a profiteer in terms of engineering, and they know that the census is intentionally being skewed in a given area, then they get the right to, you know, say, for example, water rights with sewage needs, or, you know, and you get to sell the water for a jacked-up rate as opposed to the expected rate. So just the engineering of frauding, the engineering needs and cost overruns tied to fraudulent data.
David, any thoughts on that?
I think the caller is absolutely right. I mean, there are a lot of far-reaching consequences of a census undercount, and I think he's probably got his finger on some that perhaps we hadn't even thought of.
Well, thank you for the call. We did a show back in March about what is at stake for the 2020 census, and there are some incredible community organizations across the country, you know, doing outreach and trying to educate people about why this is so important and just letting people know that this information will remain private. And for your community, it is so important to fill out that form. And you can find that at yourcallradio.org, and you just have to search 2020 census and that show will come up. Today we are joined by independent journalist David Daly. He is the author of Rat F'd, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count, and the forthcoming book, Unrigged, How Americans Fought Back. After the break, we'll talk a little bit more about the citizenship question and just what has happened in the last couple of days with the DOJ bringing in new lawyers to try to argue for the citizenship question. And then we will talk about how groups are fighting partisan gerrymandering. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with neurologist and public health specialist Dr. Aisha Akhtar about her new book, Our Symphony with Animals, on health, empathy, and our shared destinies. It explores the deep connections between humans and animals. And then we're going to spend the last 20 minutes of the show talking about the latest Kaiser strike. A number of therapists are striking tomorrow in San Francisco, and these are therapists who specifically work with children. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's show about the 2020 census and partisan gerrymandering, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Just to spend a couple more minutes on the census, David, a number of news outlets reported over the last couple of days that the Department of Justice is getting rid of certain lawyers and bringing in new lawyers to fight on behalf of the Trump administration over the citizenship question. Have you heard much about this? What do you know about this?
Yes, I think that there's a lot of career lawyers at the Department of Justice who are horrified that the administration is essentially trying to overturn and disobey a ruling by the Supreme Court. So they have essentially asked to recuse themselves and to step aside. I mean, lawyers are bound by ethical rules. When they know that something is false, they don't want to go into a courtroom and make that case. They risk potential disbarment for doing that. And what happened here is that the Supreme Court said, we do not buy the case that you were selling. We think that the rationale and reasoning you're giving us for putting this question on the census is arbitrary, capricious, and it is incongruent with the actual evidence here. They invited the administration to say if they had a different reason. What they didn't invite them to do was just go ahead and make one up. And what Trump has been saying over the last couple of days is directly the opposite of what all of these lawyers have been arguing. They have been telling the Supreme Court that there was nothing political about this, that this was about Voting Rights Act enforcement, that it was not political at all. And now Trump is tweeting and giving interviews and saying that redistricting and resources were the actual reason. These career lawyers do not want to go back into court and say, we were lying before, and this is the reason now.
The Hill reports that this announcement came late Sunday. The DOJ said it was cleaning house on the team of lawyers that have spent the past year defending the citizenship question in court. The move came just days after DOJ attorneys told a federal judge that they were caught off guard by Trump's announcement that he still wanted the question. The DOJ made the changes official in court filings on Monday evening, asking the existing attorneys to be pulled from the cases in California, Maryland, and New York and replaced with different DOJ lawyers. And Rick Hassan, a law professor at UC Irvine, tweeted, quote, this development is ominous. It almost certainly means the career attorneys working with the DOJ refused to go along with what Trump wants to do now with the citizenship question on the census, end quote. So according to this piece, and just like you said, David, legal experts were shocked by the decision to change attorneys.
This just doesn't happen. This is rare. It's almost unheard of. And it certainly suggests that all of these career lawyers wanted nothing to do with going back into court and making up a reason and trying to defend what the president is trying to do now. It's just clear that politics was governing all of this, and these lawyers were humiliated, I think, by Trump's tweets. They had already gone into court and said that the Department of Justice would go ahead and take the question off and that the printing would begin without it on there. And then Trump starts tweeting. And the federal judges start, calling conferences saying, what's going on here? And the lawyers had to go before federal judges and say, we don't know what's going on. The first we heard of this, like you, was when we saw the president's tweets. That is humiliating and embarrassing for a DOJ lawyer.
So what is the status of this, given that the Commerce Department says the census forms are already being printed?
It's a real mess. We may know as soon as tomorrow if the president intends to issue an executive order that would attempt to put the question back on. And that would trigger probably another legal battle over whether or not he has the constitutional authority to issue an executive order in this realm. It's not at all certain that he does, you know, and that too will, you know, take, you know, an awful lot of time. There are, you know, several different roads that this can go down now, and it appears that the Census Bureau probably has until about October if they really want to get this question on. But I think the most important thing to watch is what the Chief Justice does, because certainly what the administration can do is appeal to the Chief Justice and say, we are carefully reading what you said before in your ruling, and we want to offer you a different reason for why we did this. So say they do come clean. Say the administration comes clean and says, this actually is about politics and redistricting. We believe that state legislatures ought to have the right, if they want, to redistrict based on citizen voting age population. You have never said at the Supreme Court that they can't do that. We want them to have that information if they're interested in using it. That would at least be an honest administrative offering of a rationale. Would that be enough for the Chief Justice to accept? My guess is it might have been previously. It may not be now. And if it were, it would probably trigger another round of debate, you know, in lawsuits about whether it was a reason that was being used to intentionally dilute votes, if it was actually, you know, in violation of the Voting Rights Act. So this has got a long way to go still, unfortunately.
Arthur called in but couldn't stay on the line, and he wants to know if the Thomas Hoffler thumb drive and all of the data that we're now learning and the documents and his own words can be used as a pretext for a lawsuit.
Yes. I mean, certainly. I think what we are seeing is that the attorneys in these cases, you know, certainly filed briefs with all of this, with the Supreme Court, as well as with the judges in New York, Maryland, and California, where these cases are ongoing. And I think it offered, you know, very clear evidence as to what Republicans were up to, and that this had the specific intent of diluting votes.
Common Cause has a section on their website called the Hoffler Files. What else do they plan to do with this information?
It's a good question. We have only seen a small smattering of it. I mean, certainly there are cases right now in North Carolina in which Hoffler's former business associates are trying to retake power over all of those documents, and suggest that his daughter had them illegally, or that they would have passed down to his wife and not to his daughter, and that she did not have the legal authority to reveal them. So the documents themselves are in question. But there are a number of cases around the country, especially the gerrymandering cases that are about to proceed in state Supreme Courts around the country, in which it seems likely that there's a motherlode of information about the partisan intent with these Republican gerrymanders this cycle. There's about to be a trial in North Carolina that these papers, I imagine, will be incredibly instructive for. And now that the U.S. Supreme Court has said that a partisan gerrymandering is non-justiciable at the federal level, all of these state cases become all the more important as a means of fighting back against partisan gerrymandering.
David, we had you on a couple weeks ago to talk about media coverage of the census. And according to Common Cause, the documents that we can now read show that in 2017, Thomas Hoffler helped ghostwrite a letter from the DOJ to the Department of Commerce requesting the addition of the citizenship question to the census. So Hoffler helped write this letter. And I mean, Fresh Air just did an interview with Ari Berman, and they did talk about Thomas Hoffler. But I'm still surprised that in a lot of the radio reports I'm hearing, there's no mention of Thomas Hoffler in these pieces about the census.
I am, too. I mean, I think we have to stop pretending that this is about a constitutional argument and that, you know, both sides are making a reasonable constitutional case. It's right here in black and white what the Republicans were trying to do. I mean, Hoffler's study is crystal clear as to what the effects of this would be, and the chain of evidence goes directly. I mean, his memos are cut and pasted into the letters that the Department of Justice sends to the Census Bureau, and there are regular communications between Hoffler and one of the key figures at the Census Bureau, who is a top aide of Secretary Ross. So, you know, it's perfectly clear what happened here and what the intent of it all is.
Well, I hope you can take the time to read some of these documents that were exposed by this thumb drive that Thomas Hoffler's estranged daughter gave to Common Cause. And we will put a link on our website, yourcallradio.org, to what Common Cause is calling the Hoffler Files. And we will also continue to cover this issue. Independent journalist David Daley is author of Rat F'd, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count, and the forthcoming book, Unrigged, How Americans Fought Back. Now we're going to talk about partisan gerrymandering and talk about what groups are doing to fight this in light of the Supreme Court decision that basically says partisan gerrymandering is not going to be dealt with by federal courts. And if you have any questions or comments about this, this is an explosive decision. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. David, now that you've had some time to really think about this decision, can you just talk about this? I mean, this is a major decision on partisan gerrymandering.
It's a major decision, it's a shameful decision, and it's going to have long-lasting consequences for decades to come on our politics. I mean, if you look just at what happened this last decade, Republicans were able to draw state legislative and congressional maps in swing states and nationwide, and they were able to take control in Michigan and Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Florida, Georgia. And they were able to draw maps in all of these states that essentially entrenched political power in their hands, no matter what voters wanted. You had elections in just about all of those states over the course of this decade in which a majority of votes could not lead to a majority of seats. Republicans kept control in Michigan, in North Carolina, in Ohio, in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, even in years in which they won hundreds of thousands of fewer votes. And those legislatures, in turn, were able to pass anti-labor laws, I mean, laws in Wisconsin that attacked collective bargaining, the emergency manager a law in Flint, a transgender bathroom bill in North Carolina. These were all passed by legislatures that the other side won more votes, and it never switched power. And that's very, very dangerous. You see the impact on the congressional level as well. In 2012, 2014, 2016, those five states I keep talking about sent 49 Republicans to Congress and 20 Democrats, which is more than 2.5 to 1 and hardly reflective of the actual political will of those states. It has pushed our politics dramatically to the right. It has made state legislative races around the country almost non-competitive to the extreme, in that in Georgia in 2016, you saw 81% of all state legislative races had no major party competition, and it leads to bills like the abortion bill in Georgia, these extreme prohibitions that a majority of people can't do anything about. You had federal courts around the country that were beginning to say, we can solve this. We think that this is a problem, and we have the tools to fix it. Bipartisan panels of federal judges had overturned maps in North Carolina, Wisconsin, Ohio, Maryland, and Michigan. And by this ruling, the court, at the very moment we were on the verge of solving this problem, they slammed the doors to the federal courthouses, and all of this on the verge of the 2021 census, the next round of redistricting, the ability to do all of this all over again with even more powerful computers, and if the citizenship question finds its way onto the census with more precise data about a citizenship, and it's a recipe for long-term entrenched minority rule.
You talk about a number of these states, and you focused on them in another Guardian article you wrote. Let's talk about Wisconsin just for a minute. You report that last November, Wisconsin voters elected a Democratic governor, re-elected a Democratic U.S. senator, handed Democrats victories for every statewide office outside the legislature, and cast 200,000 more votes for Democratic Assembly candidates than Republicans. But that flipped just one seat and left the Republican majority at 63-36.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you want an example of what extreme partisan gerrymandering does, Wisconsin in 2018 is one of the very best examples. It was a blue wave year, right? But it didn't do anything to change the nature of the legislature. And that's what Democrats are up against. I fear sometimes that there are a lot of people who believe that gerrymandering is not that big of a problem because Democrats took back the U.S. House in 2018. But if you look deeper, if you look at Wisconsin, if you look at Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, all of these states, the blue wave crashed against a red seawall built by gerrymandering. And in all of these states, Republicans have been able to hold on to power with fewer votes or to lock in supermajorities in 50-50 states. And it's these state legislatures in most of these places that are going to be drawing the congressional maps in 2021. So this is a dramatic and serious problem.
I want to talk for a minute about how this actually affects voters. Ruth Greenberg wrote a piece. She is a lawyer, and she's been litigating to end partisan gerrymandering for the past 5 years. She wrote a piece for The Fulcrum, and she writes about her case, Gill versus Whitford in Wisconsin. And she says that her team has spent the last 12 months hearing the tragic stories of Wisconsin voters who were harmed by extreme gerrymandering and how they felt completely ignored by their legislators. She writes, take Linnea Sundstrom of Milwaukee, an archaeologist turned activist who set up a group called Supermarket Legends, whereby volunteers educate people about the voting process and register people to vote as they go in or out of grocery stores. She testified that multiple people told her they did not want to register to vote because they knew their vote would not count for the state assembly candidates. And she writes, it's hard to argue that that is a crazy conclusion. In 2 out of the 4 elections since 2012, more people voted for Democratic candidates for the assembly, yet the chamber has remained more than 60% Republican. Or take Wendy Sue Johnson of Eau Claire, a family lawyer who was active on her local school board pre-2010. All the school boards in the area used to meet monthly with assembly representatives, both Democrats and Republicans, to talk about how they could advocate for their schools in Madison. But after the gerrymander was adopted in 2011, the Republican representatives stopped turning up at the meetings and stopped responding to requests for help with their constituents. She thought, what's the point? No one's listening to us. I mean, the stories just go on and on about these lifelong civil rights activists who volunteer to, you know, register people to vote or to educate people about voting. But no one's showing up to the meetings because they say, because of gerrymandering, our votes don't count.
That's exactly right. I mean, Ruth and her team at the Campaign Legal Center are heroes, and that piece is heartbreaking. I really recommend it to everybody. But that's what partisan gerrymandering does. It breaks the tie between the people and their representative, and it insulates politicians from the ballot box. If you don't think that you can be defeated because lines have been drawn in such a way as to make it clear that only one party can win in that district, and then all you have to do essentially is win a primary election in order to win the general, you are only guarding against your extreme flank one way or the other. And those are the voters you are listening to and worried about. And all of the other voters, you could pretty much send them away and ignore them and not show up at their meetings, and you don't have to worry about it. I mean, if you look at the polls in all of these states, even in Georgia and Alabama, let alone Ohio, these states do not want the most restrictive abortion laws in the state. I'm sorry, in the nation. All three of those states back keeping Roe versus Wade intact. And so why do these politicians then feel like they can push these extreme prohibitions that a majority of people in these states don't want? And it's because they know that they don't have to answer to the majority of people in those states. They only have to answer to the most extreme base in these districts drawn in order to keep one side in power. And this is how our government gets kind of pushed to extremes, and we don't count.
Mm. In your piece, there's a photo of Kyla Guyon, a political science major, standing in the middle of Laurel Street in Greensboro, North Carolina. Gerrymandering has cut the campus of North Carolina A&T University in half. This is a black college, and it reminded me of this amazing video that Youth Radio put together about this. Reporter Kamaya Truitt looks at the strange case of North Carolina A&T State University, where state legislators divided into two congressional districts. Student activists say it's a case of gerrymandering to split the black vote, and they're mobilizing to make sure their voices are heard. I'm going to post this on our website because it really illustrates just how this is done. I mean, it's literally splitting a campus in two.
I've walked that path, and it is shocking. I mean, it's not only that it divides the campus in two, it's how precisely it does it. It actually does it so that seven of the student dorms are on one side of the line and six are on the other. I mean, it is perfect.
Wow.
And the effect of this is to give Republicans 10 of the 13 congressional seats in North Carolina, and that has not budged. Democrats have not won a single seat this entire decade. I did a panel in North Carolina a couple of months ago with the state representative who drew the maps there, and I challenged him about that line. And I said, how did that happen? And he was like, oh, I just had no idea. He said, the lines have to go somewhere, and this line just happened to go there. So if you believe that, that's the rationale, is that it's just, an absolute coincidence that this district line went right down the middle of one of the great historically black universities in the nation, dividing the city of Greensboro in two.
Wow. David, in our final minutes, what are reformers doing in light of the Supreme Court decision? How can people get involved?
That's a great question. There have been ballot initiatives in 2018. They won in Colorado, Michigan, Ohio, Missouri, and Utah that will bring some kind of independent redistricting process to those states. It's a little bit different in every one, but you'll see some small improvement, at least in all of those places. There is still the lawsuit angle is still open as far as state Supreme Courts, and a suit in 2018 was very effective and won in Pennsylvania, and it overturned a partisan gerrymander that had given Republicans 13 of 18 seats, and 2018 that produced a 9-9 map. You see a lot of Democratic energy on the left right now as far as trying to win back state legislatures. That is very hard. It's going to be uphill, but there is suddenly a lot of momentum on that side. Emily's List last week announced $50 million being given towards a state legislative race as Democrats trying to win back chambers and a seat at the table in drawing maps in 2021, a seat that they simply didn't have back in 2011. And I think that there's a lot of energy on the side of big structural reform as well. Mm. You're going to see a bill filed next week by Congressman Don Beyer of Virginia called the Fair Representation Act that would end gerrymandering by using larger multi-member districts and ranked choice voting to try and break the stranglehold of these lines on our politics.
Well, thank you. We will definitely continue to follow this. Thank you for joining us, David, and for all of your great work.
Always a pleasure, Rose. Thanks for the time.
David Daley is an independent journalist and author of Rat Effed, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count. He's also author of the forthcoming book Unrigged, How Americans Fought Back. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with neurologist and public health specialist Dr. Aisha Akhtar. She'll discuss her new book, Our Symphony with Animals, on health, empathy, and our shared destinies. And then later in the show, we will talk about the latest Kaiser strike. Tomorrow, a number of therapists and psychologists in San Francisco are going on strike. They specifically work with children. Find more information about Your Call at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. We'll be right back.